The Drop Zone.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
This from American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The stock markets have become a bad amusement park ride, and it isn't any fun. Up and down, up and down. In Japan today, stocks fell 11%. Remember, just 2 days ago, they gained 14%. That's the way it's been going. Sam Stovall, the chief strategist at Standard & Poor's, says these wild swings are typical of a market trying to find itself.
Volatility is one of the emotional benchmarks that we take a look at to help us figure out if we are getting close to a bottom. We've already gone through anxiety, despair, panic, even capitulation, and now I think we're experiencing despondency.
In Asia today, aside from the Nikkei, stocks closed 4 to 5% lower. European shares are down 2 to 3% so far. Yesterday, Wall Street had its worst day since the 87 stock market crash. The Dow fell 733 points, almost 8%. The Nasdaq sank 150 points. The S&P 500 was down 9%, 90 points to just 907. The issue isn't so much the banks right now, it's the economy and the threat of global recession. Companies are likely to seek shelter in other companies. Here's John Dimsdale.
Banks are doing it, airlines are doing it, and pretty soon auto companies might too. There are plenty of downtrodden companies that are looking like good takeover targets.
At these kinds of prices, there are lots of opportunities out there.
Tom Dusterberg is the president of Manufacturers Alliance. His industry is in recession, he says, but it has one advantage: strong export earnings from a weak dollar.
They're in a better position to do acquisitions. There's less competition from the financial buyers, the private equity players who depend so much on borrowed money, which is dried up for them.
Some consolidation can be expected in every down economy. Edward Prescott's research on business cycles won him the Nobel Prize in Economics in 2004.
There's going to be some negotiations, some give and take. And sometimes when there's rougher times, you need fewer firms in an industry.
How many fewer firms depends on how rough the times get. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
The airlines are certainly thinking merger, although we haven't seen too many deals so far. You'd think with oil prices plummeting, the airlines might be in much better shape, but they are still the airlines after all. Rachel Dornhelm has more.
Oil prices half of what they were 3 months ago? You'd think executives in the fuel-dependent airline sector would be pulling out the drinks cart to celebrate. But aviation business professor Richard Gritta says you've got to put it in perspective.
And the price of aviation fuel, which was over $4, is still not down to what it was in the heyday of the airlines in the mid and late 1990s when it was about 61 cents.
Of course, the Boeing 747 in the room is the economy. George Novak with Innova Aviation Consulting says, yes, any lower fuel costs are good news.
However, at the same time, these air carriers are facing diminishing demand in a recessed economy. So it's really just a symptom of a greater problem in the economy and something that will greatly affect air carriers.
Novak says airlines use models to lock in the lowest fuel prices to meet their future needs. But he says with all the uncertainty in the markets, those models are as confused as everybody else. I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider helping nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com. And by the Medtronic Foundation, letting listeners know that October is Sudden Cardiac Arrest Awareness Month. More about SCA risks and treatment at hearthelp.com. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation. Online at kauffman.org.
Time to visit with our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell. Chris, we've been getting a lot of emails asking why we aren't hearing from bank CEOs on this whole mess. Where is the bank leadership?
What leadership? Where are they? There's only one leader in the private sector that's involved with money, that's taken a stand, and is being reassuring to the American public.
I think I know who that might be. And when our people went out on the road last week, we heard from a lot of people about Warren Buffett. They were pointing to Warren Buffett as being the person they trusted the most.
And it's even made me almost start to admire the Japanese custom. And I always thought there was a little bit of hypocrisy there, where the head of the organization or the company that had gotten into trouble, you know, will apologize before the nation and take responsibility. You know what? I think it's a good practice. I'd like to see Lloyd Blankfein and John Thain and John Mack and James Diamond and Robert Kelly and all these heads of these banks that are getting a capital infusion from the U.S. government to take some responsibility. I think that Ben Bernanke has taken responsibility. I think Paulson has taken responsibility. You and I can have a discussion and an argument about whether they've done the right thing, but there's no question that they've been exercising leadership.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that these bank leaders are keeping their mouths shut?
The main reasons are they don't know the scale and the scope of the problems that they're still dealing with, that they oversaw. And I think that they're genuinely worried about their own pocketbooks. That's what they're most worried about. I now believe that. It's the only way to explain the actions that they're taking. I don't see any of them putting their own money into these companies. It's one of the reasons why people are admiring Warren Buffett. He's putting money into GE. He's putting money into Goldman Sachs. He's taking a risk, and he's saying, I believe we're going to be okay. I believe we're going to come out of this.
What really chafes me, Chris, about this whole situation is they made all this money, and they did a terrible job at their
job.
Okay. And now we heard there was a big meeting with a bunch of bank leaders on Wall Street, and all they seem to talk about is deregulating, things like that, tax breaks. I mean, give me a break.
And we don't want those class action lawsuits. You know, we've got to have some barriers there. What universe are they living in? Who are they talking to? One of the ironies of this whole situation is that there are many people in government who have stood up and exercised leadership in the private sector, which we have worshipped for the past three decades. We're not finding a whole lot of leaders out there.
All right. Well, you got the juices going this morning, Chris.
Yes, I do.
Chris Farrell, our economics correspondent.
Thanks a lot.
Share your thoughts with us at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.